Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Relationships Matter with Dr. Annie Abram. We will help you to understand your interactions with others so that you can create meaningful communications with the closest people in your life, as well as someone you meet fleetingly, such as a stranger on a bus. Join Dr. Annie Abram and expert guests for a deeper understanding of your relationships, how to make them better, and most importantly, how to make them matter. Please be advised that this show is not a substitute for psychotherapy. Tune in every Monday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Here is your host, Dr. Annie Abram.
Hello, all you listeners, and thank you so much for being with us today. You are listening to Relationships Matter with Dr. Annie Abram. It's a show about social justice, mindful relations, and parenting. We air every Monday at 12:30 Eastern Time. Call us at 646-716-5232 during showtime, or email us at Dr. Ann Abram, no E, A-N-N, at gmail.com, or follow us on Twitter at Ask Dr. Annie. Today we have as our guest Dr. Phyllis Nylon, and she will be talking to us about teen dating violence and intimate partner violence. She is the acting special assistant to the associate director of science in the Division of Violence Prevention at CDC. Her research focuses on the rigorous evaluation of interventions to prevent intimate violence and teen dating violence. So thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Nylon. Pleasure
to
have you.
Thank you for having me.
So if you could just give me a sense of how you describe teen dating violence and how you are going about trying to do something about ending it.
Sure. So first, it's I think useful to define teen dating violence. We define it as CDC as being a type of intimate partner violence occurring between two people who are in a close relationship. The dating relationship can be a sexual one, but doesn't necessarily have to be. And teen dating violence is when there is physical violence, psychological or emotional violence, sexual violence, or stalking that occurs within that dating relationship. Dating violence can take place in person or electronically, such as repeated texting or posting sexual pictures of a partner without the partner's consent. And it really involves unhealthy relationship behaviors in any of these forms. And they often start early in teenage years, but can continue throughout the lifetime into adulthood. And there are a number of negative effects of dating violence that victims and perpetrators experience. And it's a relatively prevalent problem, probably more prevalent than most people realize in the United States. It's also important to note that it can occur in heterosexual relationships, but also in LGBTQ relationships.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say the percentage of teen dating violence in this country is, or is that something that really is not to be determined yet?
We know from a nationally representative survey of United States high school students that among students who reported dating, 21% of girls and 10% of boys reported experiencing either physical and or sexual dating violence.
Mm-hmm. And how was the study conducted? Was it just, but was it self-identification?
It's from the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but that's a nationally representative survey of high school students that is conducted by CDC. And that data was published in 2015 in a paper by Kevin Vaughy and colleagues.
Mm-hmm. And that's basically questioning these young people or adolescents? It's a questionnaire?
Right, yes.
Okay.
Sorry. The high school students are answering a survey. So that's self-report.
Mm-hmm.
And it's among students who did report dating. So there are certainly high school students that have not started dating yet, but that's among students who were dating.
Mm-hmm. And what schools did this take place in?
In high schools across the country. It's a nationally representative sample. Every state collects YRBS data.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very encouraging. That there is that widespread evaluation.
Yes, it's nice to have the nationally representative estimates to have a sense of how widespread the problem is.
And when you facilitate health in these young people, what form does it come in? Is it psychological treatment? Is it peer groups? What is it?
Well, at CDC, we are really interested in preventing dating violence before it starts.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not as involved in the treatment, right, of kids who are reporting dating violence. That treatment often occurs when students report to their parents or to perhaps a guidance counselor at the school that these things are happening, then adults are able to intervene and try to help. The work that we're doing at CDC is really more about conducting prevention programming to try to promote healthy relationship behaviors and prevent teen dating violence before it begins.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what's going on in terms of earlier intervention? Meaning, you know, there are many preschools, kindergarten, which teach about healthy relationships. And I'm wondering if the CDC is doing any of that education or evaluation.
So we have a major initiative from the CDC called Dating Matters, strategies
mm-hmm.
to promote healthy teen relationships. And this is an intervention that we are have developed in our testing in four sites around the country in middle schools. So there
mm-hmm.
certainly are programs out there that promote social emotional development among kids as young as preschool and elementary school
right.
age, as you say. Our major initiative intervenes with kids starting in sixth grade, and we have curricula programming in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade in our comprehensive approach. We have programs for parents of sixth, seventh, and eighth graders. We have a communications campaign that is promoted through older teens in those middle schoolers' communities, and a training program for teachers in their schools. So we're targeting the middle school age with our Dating Matters initiative because
mm-hmm.
this is really the age when kids are starting to think about dating and romantic relationships, but they're really not quite there in terms of being, you know, fully entrenched in intimate relationships at that point. And so it seems like a good opportunity to really promote healthy relationship behaviors among these middle schoolers, that these skills can be applied both to their peer relationships, their relationships with their parents, and if they're dating, their dating relationships.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was thinking about early intervention because it's my belief that the earlier that we talk to kids about healthy relationships, the better. And I think that if you offer that curriculum pre-K through fifth grade, that you would have a head start, as it were. I realize that's not your field of expertise, but I just simply want to put that out there, that I think that it can be extremely important to, you know, the development of healthy relationships, and also help the family look at what relationships they have and perhaps benefit from these curriculums that are in preschools through fifth grade, sixth grade. And I'm wondering, along those lines, what your experience with parents has been in, you know, the sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. You mentioned that you had parent meetings.
Right. We do have separate programs in that initiative for parents of sixth, seventh, and eighth grade students. And the parents who have been involved in our programming have really been very engaged and have really reported that they've learned a lot from the programs, and that the programs are helping them kind of engage with their children around these topics better. You know, we have faced the problem in dating matters of parents having very busy lives, which of course they do. So when you're offering parent programming, it's really important to think about timing programs at a time when it's convenient for working parents, offering multiple times, perhaps offering childcare if possible, offering food helps, especially when meetings are held around dinner times. You know, parents have got a lot going on these days with work and kids with multiple activities and, you know, young people with their own lives as well. So scheduling certainly has, you know, has posed challenges, but the parents who have been able to engage in the programs have been really, really involved, and often our earlier kind of program participants have encouraged other parents to take part in the program when it was offered again. I think parents want to engage with their kids around these topics, but often don't know how. It can be a tough topic to bring up with kids, and I mean, as a parent myself, I know that sometimes we're not always ready to admit that that our children are old enough to be thinking about things in the next developmental stage. So I think it's very helpful to have a forum where parents can learn about how to engage with their kids and also talk with one another about strategies that their fellow parents are using.
Yes, absolutely. I think that peer help is very useful. I'm just wondering if there's been any resistance on the part of parents that you've noticed to come to such meetings, that they, you know, really do not want to think about this problem.
Well, as is the case with these sorts of things, right, we're talking to the parents who do come, but we don't always hear from the parents who don't want to engage in the programs about why they don't want to engage. Certainly with the student curricula, we had parents who were concerned about the fact that we were talking about relationships with their kids. We had some parents say, you know, my children aren't dating and they're not allowed to date until they're much older, so this curricula doesn't really apply to us or doesn't make sense. And we certainly respect that. You know, the parents you know, had a right for their children not to be part of our research trial, and you know, were notified that their school was doing programming and were able to talk to their schools about it and pull their kids out if they didn't feel comfortable with it. So there certainly were parents who didn't feel like it was quite the right time for this programming. But as I say, a lot of the programming was very generally focused on communication skills and conflict management and other kind of relationship skills that are applicable across relationships, not just relevant to dating relationships.
Mm-hmm. And what about the young people, the sixth, seventh, and eighth graders? Are they required to go to these programs?
We implemented Dating Matters across I think there were over 50 schools who participated across the 4 years of implementation. We're in our final year now. And it was up to schools to determine how they handled the curriculum programming. But in most schools, you know, if students really didn't want to be there or didn't want to participate, the schools were able to, or their parents didn't want them to participate. The schools found other activities for the students to participate in while the programming was happening. But I think that did differ. You know, health departments were funded to implement across the schools in their community. And the schools had a relative degree of autonomy in determining if that would be a core part of their curriculum or if it was going to be offered in a different way.
Mm-hmm. So it was very flexible, in other words.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, what about the children themselves? Was there much interest on their part?
I would say there was a good deal of interest. We conducted focus groups this past summer and talked to students who participated in the programming and across the four sites. And in general, the students reported liking most aspects of the program. They were relatively engaged. They liked what they were learning about. They especially liked the opportunities to engage in skill-building activities and role plays, et cetera. So the program was generally very well received.
Mm-hmm. And the program was, you know, about teen dating violence in general and then about very specific skills that they could learn, right, to protect themselves.
Right. The sixth, seventh, and eighth grade curricula were different in each grade. And students who were in sixth grade in the first year or two of the program and stayed in the school were able to participate in the curricula in sixth, seventh, and eighth grade. So they were all a little bit different and built upon one another. The seventh and eighth grade curricula focused more on dating relationships than the sixth grade curricula did. The sixth grade curricula was really more about healthy relationship skills and respect for each other and respect for ourselves more generally and not as specific to dating relationships in that younger grade. And then the dating violence piece got sort of more introduced as the kids became older.
Right. Well, that makes sense, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So overall, do you have the statistics of how many 6th, 7th, and 8th graders attended the program in, you know, a school population, a certain, let's say it's 400,000, not 400,000, 4,000 or 400 probably, high school? Or middle school. Do you know how many percentage-wise participated?
We do have estimates of how many kids were exposed. I apologize, I don't have those numbers in front of me right now. As I said, we had roughly 50 middle schools participate for at least part of the four-year implementation period across four sites. And the schools were intended to offer the programming to the whole school. As I mentioned, there were parents who requested that their students not participate, but generally it should have been for the schools offering the Dating Matters comprehensive program that we've been talking about. All sixth, seventh, and eighth graders in that school should have been exposed. And then our comparison was an evidence-based program called Safe Dates, and that is that was implemented in the eighth grade of the comparison schools. The trial compares the Dating Matters comprehensive program to the standard of care program, which was the Safe Dates program in eighth grade. But I don't, I'm sorry, I don't have the numbers of children exposed in front of me, but it is in the thousands.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't thinking about the overall number. I was thinking more of the percentage of kids in one particular school. You know, is it 50%?
Oh, I see.
Is it 25%?
Yeah, I'd guess that it's upwards of 90%. Most schools did a whole school implementation, so everybody was exposed unless they were withdrawn from being in the program. So, again, it'll vary school to school, but my guess is that the average across schools was above 90% of students in those schools.
Wow. Now, is this an in-school curriculum, or is it outside of school, after school?
Yeah, so the student curriculum happened in school during the school day. A lot of our schools implemented it in health classes because that's kind of what made sense to them. But, again, schools had some autonomy in when they decided to fit it into the school day. And you know, they had a whole school year to implement it, but the sixth grade curricula was six sessions, and some did it, you know, one session every day for 6 days, and some of them did it over 6 weeks. So it really just kind of depended. And then the seventh grade curricula and the eighth grade curricula also happened within school. The parent programs obviously happened outside of school. Most of those happened weeknights. And then there were activities through the communications campaign that I mentioned, where older students in their communities and adults hosted events and managed social media pages for the students, and all of that happened also outside of school. So it had in school and outside of school components.
So just changing subjects a bit, not completely, but I know that your work is also around intimate partner violence.
Yes.
And I would say that many, many people would refer that to domestic violence, right?
Right.
And I'm wondering what the CDC does in that arena.
So CDC has worked with academic partners and federal partners in a number of different arenas in attempts to develop prevention programs around intimate partner violence and test new prevention programs. There's also a program funded in all 50 states called RPE, or Rape Prevention Education. It's mostly around sexual violence, but I think they do some work that kind of veers into intimate partner violence as well. And then we also have some grantees who participate in the Delta program, which is around building statewide coalitions around around intimate partner violence. So we have a good bit of research that happens here around intimate partner violence and developing strategies to prevent intimate partner violence, and then also some programmatic work. CDC also hosts the National Intimate Partner Violence and Sexual Violence Survey. That's a nationally representative survey on those two forms of violence. And the first report from that was published from 2010 data, and information about that can be found on CDC's website if you go to www.cdc.gov/violence-prevention. You can find links to the it's called NISFIS, the survey for short, to the NISFIS report. There's also a 2014 publication out on the 2011 data, and that gives us national estimates on reports of intimate partner violence and sexual violence victimization in the United States. So we have worked in surveillance, prevention, and programming.
Sorry for interrupting you, but what has been the biggest legislation that has had an effect on intimate partner violence in the past 5 years?
Well, certainly the Violence Against Women Act, which was originally sponsored by Joe Biden and other colleagues in the Senate, I don't have the first year that was authorized in front of me, and I should know it. It was recently reauthorized, and in each reauthorization, Congress has built the program a little bit more. And certainly that addresses both intimate partner violence and sexual violence as well. There's been recently a large focus on dating violence and sexual violence on college campuses, some language in that legislation that focuses specifically on this problem and its prevalence on college campuses as well. So I think if I had to pick one piece of legislation that's been most influential, it would be the Violence Against Women Act. Really has brought attention to this this issue, which I think before was really considered more of a private a private issue, and has really brought it to the forefront.
Mm-hmm. And then I'm aware of several state legislators passing laws. So, for example, having to do with once you're arrested, is the lethal weapon, if there was one, taken away? Or, you know, how is the order of protection dealt with? Is the person, the perpetrator, does he go to jail immediately? Or is there a wait time? How is that handled? And, you know, I know that there are lots of relatively new laws on the books. And it's interesting to me how far forward we've come since the big act, the Violence Against Women Act, which I think was, I mean, it was not that long ago. I don't have the year in mind, but I know it was Joe Biden. But it was some time ago.
Yeah, I'd agree. States have also kind of followed the charge of focusing more on these issues. And all 50 states do differ in terms of their laws around mandatory arrest and protection orders and you know, firearm legislation when there is a protection order and all of that. They differ quite a bit. Some states have a lot of legislation in this area, whereas other states are kind of just getting started focusing on this issue. And we don't have a lot of policy research about the effects of these policies. But I think would be interesting to look at that eventually. Now, we just looked it up. It's 1994 when Congress first passed
the Violence Against Women Act.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're looking at?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what date did you give us?
It was 1994 that Congress first passed the Violence Against Women Act, and then it's reauthorized.
Yes, on a number of occasions.
Yes.
I think. So thank you so much for joining me. You certainly have given us a lot of information, and I think also a lot of hope for young people who are involved or perhaps are at risk for becoming involved in teen dating violence. And it sounds like the CDC has it pretty well covered at this point. I'd be interested to know what happens at the end of the research.
We hope the trial results for the Dating Matters initiative will be out in 2017. And there's certainly other work that's occurring through CDC funding that focuses on dating violence. So I do agree. It's, you know, it is a significant problem. It's one that we need to pay attention to. But it's important to remember that dating violence is preventable. And perhaps by preventing dating violence, we may also be effective at preventing long-term trajectories of involvement in violence, adult intimate partner violence, and perhaps other forms as well. So it's really important to be promoting healthy relationships among our young people.
Right, and I also think that we should add, you know, health as in physical health, mental health, emotional health. You know, if young people can be prevented from getting into teen dating violence, their health overall is likely to be much, much better.
Yes,
and I think
that's
particularly
right.
True with mental health.
That's absolutely right. We know that experience with dating violence puts youth at risk for symptoms like depression, anxiety, and suicidal thoughts, and also other behaviors that affect health, such as substance use. So I think you're absolutely right. If we're successful at promoting healthy relationships among young people, we'll also be removing certain risks to their health that dating violence can pose.
Yes, and I think one of the other factors is if these young people can feel close to each other without the teen dating violence component, you know, that gives them peers to be close with. And that, in and of itself, can prevent teen dating violence. The close relationships.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. It's important to promote healthy relationships.
So, Dr. Nyland, thank you so much for joining me today. You've given us a lot, as I said before, of hopeful information. And I'm very interested in following your research.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
You're welcome. And could you just give us the website for CDC?
Sure. It's www.cdc.gov. And then you can find violence prevention information at cdc.gov/violence-prevention.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.